listening to Not to Lie from Asteroid G, invading a secret island military base and then discovering you can easily blow it up. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul here, gonna channel his inner License to Kill as we're gonna get into a fun series this year of James Bond.
Yes, we discussed this in the previous season, and we're actually going to put it into effect. One of the things we're going to do, among the many things I'm trying to do right now to keep my co-host happy, is we're going to watch a lot of James Bond. We're going to go one or two movies at a time. We're going to start with the very first movie in the series, with the very first appearance of Sean Connery as James Bond in Dr. No. But before we get to that, we want to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, Spectre, from the very first mission to the last. Spectre is there for you. Dr. No is about our friendly neighborhood secret agent who says his name everywhere he goes, James Bond. I wrote a bunch of notes. I didn't even write that one down because that's just such a trope, but like goes in everywhere. And it's like, who are you? I'm Bond. James Bond. It's like, do you not have a cover like once?
But it's I have this theory, and maybe you've heard this. Like, I believe James Bond is the cover, and that their name is actually not James Bond.
Oh, yeah.
They just are James Bond.
Oh yeah. No, that's a theory that we can touch upon when we finally get to the Daniel Craig era as well. But it's this thing where it's not that James Bond is a person. And I think even on Her Majesty's Secret Service kind of alludes to this. He's not a person. He's the secret identity, much as 007 is. So whoever they are, they're James Bond for the moment. But when everything we know about him, that his car, that his apartment, that everything he owns is in under the name of James Bond, it's less a secret identity and more now just an identity. And like,
very true. Very true.
Like with Archer wandering around telling everyone he's the world's greatest secret agent. James Bond does that, but he does it unironically.
He really does. He really does. And he's got no problem throwing himself into any situation where he does not belong.
No. So he is called in by the British government to look into something going on in Jamaica. A contact went dead and is missing, and their secretary is missing, and they were on to something. And as that something eventually turns out, it's a secret plan by Dr. No, who works for Spectre, although as I looked it up, Spectre is not mentioned in the book this is based on. It's only mentioned in the movie because they were alluding to future things to come. Dr. No, who works for Spectre, an evil organization, basically like MI6, but evil.
Usually the antithesis in all Bond movies. There's other things he goes against, but usually it always boils down to like Spectre. Bond versus Spectre.
Spectre or something like Spectre. Something always Spectre-ish. And Dr. No is working on some sort of nuclear something to take out the world powers and the evil. Honestly, when you watch it, it's an interesting spy film for about two-thirds. It's James showing up, pretending to be various things, always named James Bond, trying to investigate what's going on, and actually running legitimately a decent investigation for about two acts. And then in the third act, he and his helpful companion, who eventually dies, because of course, go to an island, meet a Bond girl, and the plot is basically just thrown aside because the villain is just like, let me monologue for half an hour and then you kill me. It's kind of falls apart.
It's weird, the ending. I was watching it again recently to refresh myself. It's been a while since I sat down and watched the whole thing. I'm like, wow, this is good.
It was really
good. And then it gets to the radiation point where, like, you know, they're sent to their rooms after they're captured. I'm like, and then it just, like, you're right. It is like the joke of monologuing and like the joke in The Incredibles, like, you got me monologuing.
And that was what I thought too, was like, you got me monologuing, because up to the point where James Bond shows up on the island, meets Honey Rider, I want to say Honey Galore because they're all basically galore, meets Honey Rider, and then has a James Bond girl to follow him around like an obedient puppy dog. The villain goes from wanting to kill James Bond no matter what, even so far as having like a nasty spider dropped into his bed, which is such an ineffective way to kill someone because the spiders seem to have no interest in it. No,
not at all.
Like, we're going to kill this man. We cannot fail. Let me give you this thing that is going to automatically fail. James Bond shows up on the island and Dr. No's like, no, I don't want to kill him. No, that wasn't my plan. I want to see if he's good enough to join Spectre. And you're sitting there going, wait, what?
This is all a test? This is the test?
Let's after we've discussed this with him and shown that he's not going to join us, let's put him in a prison cell with no guards and no cameras and let him easily escape.
It's the classic like Dr. Evil thing. Yes! Like, you know, you're not going to yes! watch him die. Like, no, I'm just going to close the door and assume everything went to plan. Like,
exactly.
Why?
No, I think at some point we do need to cover the Austin Powers movies while we're sure. going through this. It's this thing where the original Austin Powers is very much, it felt almost like a send up specifically of Dr. No. Like, it has some jokes about the later films, but most of the plot feels like a joke for joke beat on yeah. Dr. No, to all the things that it does and all the ways that it like presents itself and everything. It's very jokey trying to riff on what Dr. No does, because Dr. No is one of the better ones, but Dr. Yeah. No is also really stupid in the end.
Very much so. And like, you know, I feel like Dr. Evil is like an amalgamation of several Bond yeah. villains. There's yep. Dr. No, there's absolutely Blofeld in there yep. too. And like, yep. you know, and then and all this other stuff, but we'll cover Austin Powers when we cover that, of course. But you know, it is clearly inspired by Bond. A lot of things are though. I mean, this is what, 1962,
yeah.
I think is this when this came out. So you're looking 64 years of Bond, you know, and we're going to get another one at some point, you know, I guess, because it's like,
we'll get one eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. And it's fine. That's one of the ones that like, all right, whatever, another Bond. Let's go.
So going through this, and I don't know if you took some notes, but I took a lot of notes.
I did see that. Yeah. Yeah. We'll go over those too, because so, like we'll talk about each part a little bit. Yeah.
So the opening titles didn't feel very James Bondy. And like we're used to a certain style from the later films, but yes. this one definitely was not like that. It's obviously it's the first movie, it's trying to find itself. But it's almost yeah. like amateurish by comparison to what came afterwards.
There's some formula
yep.
like you're saying to the intro of Bond, like, you know, you have your Bond song, like every song, every movie has its own song, and that's yep. that's an eventual thing. This didn't really have that. It just had like an intro, and like it usually has like sexy girls dancing and James shooting his gun, and like we kind of had that, but it was just like
not really
very very 60s kind of weird with like yeah. some like just like there was times when I thought like I saw a schlong on the screen, but it was just the way the person was standing and her arm was in front of the other girl. It was just weird.
It was very weird.
Totally get the intro, but I mean, to your point, like they were figuring it out. They didn't know at no. this point in the first episode that the intro would become not just like a staple of the franchise, but also like something that the fans I think would come to expect. Like they literally have famous people sing the intros for these
yep.
specifically. Like yep. they're geared for these people. They're written almost for them, you know, eventually. So
yep. they had
to your point in the beginning, not so great.
Yeah, the titles were basically just the James Bond thing, the yep. like just that. And then on loop for a little while, and then it starts playing Three Blind Mice, which was really stupid. It was like
the Jamaican version of Three Blind
yeah,
Mice.
Yeah, it was very weird. Also, yeah. At that same note, the barrel shot felt like almost weirdly improvised, and like it wasn't, yeah. it didn't really come together. It was,
yeah.
it wasn't quite there. Obviously, a lot of this stuff gets way more professional.
Sure, but yep. even to your point, the barrel shot, like, that's not even Connery taking the barrel
no!
shot.
It was just some random dude, which is
some
funny.
Random guy.
Because, like, I note later in my notes, like, the action is great, but there's some laughably bad projection screens and some very obvious stunt doubles that just do not blend yeah. in. Like, no. there's that sequence where he's coming down through a tunnel, and you can get a close-up of the face, and it's not Sean Connery, it's his stunt double. And you're like, did they not catch that in post? Did they not see that... I don't know. Anyway.
It reminds me of, like, that really bad Michael Jordan, like, McDonald's commercial from, like, the mid-90s where it was, like, him and his mom doing foul shots, and then it had, like, Larry Johnson as his mother dunking the basketball. He's like, Mama's got ups or whatever. I'm like, like did you do... what?
Yeah.
What did
yeah.
I just look at?
So another thing I noted early on was that when we get introduced to James Bond, like, there's a long sequence to get him in, and we hear his name before we actually see him. So there's some, like, presence given to him. He is seen playing Baccarat, which is a game most of us don't play anymore. We do not live in Monaco. We do not get to play Baccarat. And that's not a game that I think most people know. I'm not even certain that most people would recognize that they're playing Baccarat, because it kind of just looks like they're playing blackjack, honestly.
It's weird, yeah. It's
yeah.
it's actually chem de fer, I think is what they call it in the movie. I had to look it up as I was like, what is it? It's a form of Baccarat. It's like almost more exciting for people that play Baccarat, I guess. And like the whole thing is you have to make a hand closest to the number 9 is what they're going for. I didn't understand the
no.
what they were doing with the cards,
no.
but like face
no
cards and tens are worth 0.
Yeah.
Any number you get is you're looking for the highest to a 9. So when Bond keeps drawing 9s, it's like, hey, I'm Bond, look at me, kind of.
I'm sexy. It did speak to something that I think played better in the 1960s, but maybe doesn't play now, which is the opulence of the game. Again, we don't play Baccarat anymore. When we think of, like, an opulent game, maybe we think of, like, craps or just
Texas Hold'em,
something like that. Yeah. Not roulette. Yeah. That roulette's a cheap game. But there are certain games that we play instead because we don't really play Baccarat anymore.
It's an old-fashioned game kind of thing. You know?
It is old-fashioned, but they were also playing with the big tiles as their checks instead of, like, standard circular checks, which, like, a standard player like us, middle class, doesn't even know what those things are.
But then,
if you notice, he also tips him with one of those. So he's a good tipper.
Those are not $10 checks, for sure.
No, that's like $1,000 that he tipped the guy, and he walked away with a fat wad right there. Maybe 1,000 pound or whatever it is that he's
whatever
playing.
Whatever it may be. Yeah.
Whatever it is. But yeah, that, again, it's supposed to speak to his opulence and his willingness to just throw money away for the thrill of it. Mm-hmm. None of that plays for us, but it plays for the character if he lived in the 1960s.
That was who you wanted to aspire to be. You know, you wanted to be that guy that was smoking the cigarette at the table, you know, with the pretty girl looking at him and everything. Like, that was what, you know, that was the ideal man.
Aspirational.
You know, playing at the time.
It's as much a lifestyle as it is anything else, which I think is also something that we've lost from Bond over time. We've focused him down to being much more of an action hero instead of, like, being this, like, aspirational dude. Maybe in part because, you know, at a certain point past the 1960s, James Bond is more caricature than actual man.
And fair, we'll
And we'll see when that happens in these movies. Is it Connery's fault? Is it Roger Moore's fault? When did that transition happen? That's something I'm curious about here. Also, at that same Baccarat table, his line of Bond, James Bond, isn't his own. Yeah, the girl says, Trench, Celia Trench, to introduce herself, and he just kind of copies her. Yeah, so, because he just introduces himself as James Bond everywhere else. Still, using his name, but...
Mr. Bond.
Yes, exactly. They spend a lot of time talking about his gun, the Beretta versus the PPK.
Yeah, and I then it never interesting.
It never comes up again afterwards. It doesn't matter.
I mean, I want to really pay attention as we go through this and see, like, does that come back up in these movies at any point? Like, what does the gun thing come back up? Because he says, I've been using a Beretta for 10 years.
Yep.
Well, yeah, not anymore. If you want to keep working here, it's like, oh, shucks. Okay, chief, kind of thing. Like, fucking, like, what's the dynamic here?
What was the point?
All they said was basically like a jammed up on you last time and he spent 6 months in the hospital. Like, oh, okay, so you've been injured before, kind of thing. Again, not a perfect action hero.
But it doesn't do anything for the plot later. We don't see the PPK matter. We don't see him switch back to a Beretta. It's quote-unquote a gun over the fireplace, amusingly. That's actually a gun that doesn't come up at all.
Weird.
I was amused that the aspirational James Bond drinks Smirnoff.
Yes, I was very excited to see that.
Yeah, it was fancy back in the day, but now you're sitting there going, Smirnoff's like low brand. Where's your Grey Goose or something else? You know?
I know, where's the Belvedere at? You know, give me something that's really, really top shelf kind of thing.
You're nice, like age 20-year Tito's or some shit like that.
Yeah. Tito's a solid American vodka. It's very solid.
Vodka's
the devil. Vodka is the devil, but it is a solid vodka.
I can drink whatever. I don't have a problem with that.
My dad used to have handles of Laird's in the house. Oh. Man. You want to talk like $10 handles? Like, that shit was nasty.
That's the college bottle that you have right there. James Bond does not drink that, at least. Even if he did have like three bottles of Smirnoff in every scene, just floating around.
Yakov Smirnoff, pulling one out of the drawer. opening one over here.
Opens the glove box and there's
one in there. Smirnoff,
like, were you sponsored by Smirnoff? Did we miss something here, Bond?
It might have. I mean, you know, usually they turn logos away, so maybe Yakov Smirnoff did give a little bit of money for this.
As he's wandering around doing his investigation and going into places and, like, looking around, talking to people and everything, like, anytime they had a dead spot and they didn't know what to do with him, they just played the James Bond theme, and it felt really weird.
It did, you know, like, every, like, that's not...
As he's just wandering in with, like, to write down on a note card or something.
Well, any telegrams for me or whatever, like, any posts for me, whatever he was saying, like, going to the hotel desk. May I use your phone? Like, the landlines are just hilarious and everything.
Not stressful at all. And they're, like, playing the action theme. It was kind of weird. Just very, very strange.
Yeah.
It is a huge investigation movie up to a point where they finally discover that the person that died had been investigating Crab Key Island off the coast of Jamaica. And that is where they determine that the radioactive stones that they discovered were coming from, and that where Dr. No's base is set up. And so they go over there, and it goes from that really cool investigation where Dr. No wants James Bond dead to the island base where Dr. No suddenly wants James Bond alive. And even when he decides that James Bond can't be trusted, still keeps him alive. And then it's like the last 9 minutes happen. They're like, oh, we have to have James Bond win. And, like, it just ends so anticlimactically.
It really does. Yeah. And you can't forget, like, in that whole thing, throughout the whole movie, you got to throw in that, like, touch of 60s racism in there, too. Like, right down to, like, fetch my shoes real quick to the guy that's with him.
And even Dr. No, is Dr. No supposed to be Asian? Because he's played by an English actor who kind of looks like he's in yellow face, but kind of not.
I feel like this is another instance of, like, you know, we're whitewashing in the 60s, and there's a little touch of racism to this, I think.
I didn't read the book, so I don't know, but, like, he declares that Dr. No works for the East, which could be Russia, could be the Asian country, so it's hard to know. But with how Dr. No is dressed and acts and everything else, it does feel like he's supposed to be an Asian villain, as opposed to just a generic white English villain. And everyone who works on the island with him is Asian. So it's
pretty much,
it's like, it's very clearly this is an evil Asian installation. So you are right about that casual racism. Like, they're not like using slurs, but they're kind of like just very dismissive of anyone who isn't the white guy.
Yeah. But like even like Quirrell, the poor guy that comes to the island with him, you know, like,
and dies.
And dies, of course, you know, the token guy from Bond, you know, starting the guy at formula, and we're building it here in this movie. But like, you know, he even like, I had forgotten that he's just like, hey, fetch my shoes. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What did you get your own shoes as you walk away with the pretty blonde? Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then, like, you know, at that same time, Dr. No brings him into the base, and they're just like, well, we're going to keep you alive and everything like that. And then it's like, when he decides, well, you know, you're not going to join us, but since you're going to die anyway, let me tell you all about the evil organization I work for that you didn't know about and had no clue existed. It's Spectre, you see, and here's all that you need to know. And it's like, it's that monologuing thing. Like, if Dr. No had just shut the fuck up and said, well, you're not going to join with me and my organization, let me have you killed, Bond wouldn't have known Spectre existed and wouldn't have been able to take that back to MI6.
No, but then we don't get 64 years of James Bond movies. We just get whatever, you know, Sir Ian Fleming continued to write.
I know, it's just, it's bad writing from the characters. I don't know if that's
It's horrible. Like, I completely agree. It's horrible.
It's so bad.
It is terribly bad writing. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm with you 100%, but, you know, I'm glad that they didn't fumble it so bad that we didn't get all the things we got out of it at the end of the day.
So, yeah, it's this thing where, like, I liked it better than I thought I would the second time around, because I watched all these, like, a few years ago during COVID. I just, like, one a week went through and started watching all of them, just for the sake of. At the time, I'm like, wow, these old ones didn't really age well. They're pretty bad. But, like, I think now that my expectations of them have been lowered even further, which is sad to say. Like, this one played well for two of the three acts. The third act is a disappointment.
It's true. Like, I was enjoying it. I was like, wow, this is a pretty good watch. And then we hit the island, and it's like, ah, now I remember why this was not on the top of the list. Like, it was good. Like, you made a lot of good points in your notes. It was very much a mystery espionage movie for the beginning. And you know, you really got to see Bond do some actual detective work almost.
Be a spy. Yeah.
Be a spy, you know, be that guy. And, you know, and of course, you can't not have Bond be Bond without, you know, sleeping with anything that walks, apparently, that he can find, because he got that at least several times in this movie. Like,
he did. This was interesting to go back to and look at again. It's different than I remember. It's better than I remember. It's still not great. There are ones that we're going to get to later that I think I enjoy a whole lot more. I think we'll end up doing From Russia with Love and Goldfinger next time, because you know, we've got 26 of these to get through, and I think if we did, like, one every 3 weeks, we'd be here forever. So we'll
be here for at minimum 26 weeks.
So. 26 weeks with other things that we're doing as well.
Yeah.
It'll take us a long time to get through it, especially since we take breaks and other things. So, I think we'll probably end up doing From Russia with Love and Goldfinger next, which are two of the I think some fans would call top tier ones. We'll see if they hold up.
Top tier villains, anyway, for sure, in those movies.
So, and that's good, because when we finally get around to the Austin Powers movies, those are the ones that are really heavily going to influence what we remember about, and that are going to lead to the jokes that we like. So.
Exactly. And like, this movie almost was funny watching it after the fact again, because this felt almost inspired by Austin Powers. And you had to remember, wait, no, Austin Powers was inspired literally by this.
Oh, so, yeah. Like the conveyor where they get cleaned of the radiation reminded me of the conveyor where Austin Powers gets defrosted, or like,
exactly.
Dr. No is sitting there in his plastic suit to prevent the radiation. I'm like, that's what Dr. Evil wore. And like, there was several moments just like that. You can tell they stole set design and costume design. It was very funny. This movie, for what it was decent. Like, for a 1960s low budget spy film trying to figure out what it was trying to be, it almost succeeds perfectly.
It really does. You know, it's a crisp little 109 minutes. It's not overly long. It doesn't, you know, think it's more than it really is. I'm looking at some of the stats here. Budget, $1.1 million, you know, of like 200, like 392 pounds or whatever it was to make back in the day. 92,000 pounds, excuse me, to make. Box office, $59 million. That's almost a 60% return.
Huge.
It's
real
enormous.
Good. You can see why they made successful. A series. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, this took off and went. And some of them have successes and some of them didn't. But, I mean, you cannot argue with a huge ROI on this one. This kicked it off.
No, and that's why for a lot of people, Connery is their Bond. This movie in particular helped to set the template, helped to set the standard. But it's not so invested in the tropes yet because it hadn't created them. We're going to see that in the later ones, is like, just how much are the tropes like really influencing the series? Does it become more trope than anything else?
Right. So. And we'll get there. It's going to be fun to do this and like see how they evolve along the way in a very short period of time. Cause I've seen all of these throughout my life as well. And I've watched them, you know, when they come on for time, but I never watched them in a quick sequence like this. So I'm excited to see that as well. And our thoughts as this evolves along the way.
Absolutely. So we once again want to thank Spectre, our sponsors for this episode. From the first mission to the last, Spectre is there for you. I've been your host, Mike Finkelstein, always enjoying going into a secret military base in my plastic suit.
And I'm your buddy, Mike the Ghoul, over here. 007 License to Kill on his way. Spectre from the Shadows as well. So we're going to have some fun here this year, people. Enjoy the series.
We will see you all with more Bond next time.